Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Attitude Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Board of Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Wharton. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the economic bubble right after this. Hey, if you've got a lot, 50 by 100 feet, with a 2,000 square foot house, then you've got space for six raised beds that contain 2,400 square feet. That's called French intensive culture. 2,400 square feet is enough space to grow all of the food that a family of six will eat in one entire year. That's right, a family of six, 2,400 square feet, and you can do it in the middle of downtown Cleveland, Ohio, just as easily as you can out in the country. The idea that you're trapped in the city and that you can't provide for yourself and you can't provide for your family because of a space limitation is a fiction. You don't need extra cash to buy a tractor, a plow, a harrow, a shovel, a rake, and a hoe is more in line with what we need for an urban French intensive culture farm. We don't need a lot of acres, combines, or price supports. What we need is pruners, newspaper for mulch, and open pollinated seed. Now, if you've got a 2,400 square foot backyard, which is big enough for a decent garden, you can feed your whole family right there in downtown Cleveland, New York, or wherever your house is located, 50 by 100 foot lot. Now, we have designed this program called Subsistence and Survival to allow for fresh vegetables and to reduce stress on you by not making you can, dry, or store everything that you produce all at the same time. You won't need any specialized tools. All you need are some simple hand tools like a rake, a hoe, and a shovel, a supply of newspaper for mulch, some seeds to plant, and some knowledge about how to plant them and how to use them. That's what's important. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And remember, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about all the bad news. So I showed you from the underground economic reports, the Mugambo Guru and Bob Chapman and Reichbacher and, I don't know, Bill Bonner and a couple others, that all's not as well as our government would have us believe, that they lie to us a lot. The consumer price index is as useless as tits on a boar hog. It's just filled with lies and inaccuracies, and what we're really engaged in here is hyperinflation and 22% rises in real estate values or prices over the last 5 years, 20% a year, is telling you, boys and girls, that hyperinflation is at the doorstep. This is not good news. This is bad news. This is where you need to hunker down, and I showed you the Mugambo. He starts his newsletter off nearly every week, and he says, well, I'm hunkered down in the Mugambo bunker, getting ready for tough times ahead. What kind of tough times is he preparing for? What's he thinking about? And so he, along with a lot of these other economic newsletter writers, are telling you what you need to do is to get debt-free, pay off all of your debts, debt-free, pay off that $146,000 that you owe, you know, your per capita share of the national debt and your mortgage on your house and your consumer debts and car payments and all of that, your $146,000, pay all that off next week so you're free and clear. And then put the rest of your money into gold and silver. Now let's talk about this gold and silver, because you hear a lot about that. People are talking about how gold and silver is poised for this great price increase. Well, let me tell you where the price increases are going on. The price of soybeans went up 13% last month. Corn went up 9% last month. Foodstuffs as a whole over the last year have gone up 15%. Gold didn't do that well. And I'm not so sure that putting all of your money into gold is the panacea that everybody, at least on the conservative wing of this issue of the economy, are making it out to be. So on the one hand, you've got the liberals, and they tell you that gold is an anachronism that ought to be abolished and done away with and banned from society. Gold is bad for you, and you shouldn't have it. And the other side says, well, you can't live without it. Now, it's true that God told you to use just weights and balances, told you to use gold and silver coin, gave you the gold and silver and the iron to dig out of the hills. And that if we had followed that advice, then we would still be using gold and silver coin. But we didn't follow that advice, and we're using fiat paper currency, which has now put us in the position that we're in today in 2005, with hyperinflation banging at the door, a trade balance of around $600 to $800 billion a year, a national budget deficit of around $400 to $500 billion a year, depending upon who you listen to and how you're counting, and enormous personal consumer debt. And then we're sitting over here with the Chinese, the Japanese, and South Koreans with about $1 trillion worth of dollars sitting out there ready to buy up everything that isn't nailed down. And our pension plans are going out of circulation. They're about to go bankrupt. United Airlines just bankrupted out of theirs. And all the other airlines are going to have to do the same thing. General Motors is poised on the verge of bankruptcy. We're exporting about, I forgot how many it is, but it's 2 million jobs have been sent over to China, India, and other countries. Or we're exporting our jobs, called outsourcing. We import Philippine nurses to work in our hospitals. And what kind of crazy, lunatic, fringe nonsense is this? How does this benefit you, Joe, and you, Sally? Or me, George Gordon? Well, it doesn't benefit us. It probably benefits Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and Dick Cheney, and Halliburton, and General Electric, and General Motors. Probably these big multinational corporations make a lot of money, but it isn't solving our problem. And we're faced with a problem here. How are we going to survive this? How is our standard of living going to be impacted over the next 5, 10, 20 years? Now, I pointed out when I started the series that I'm getting about one call a week from people just like you that are saying, Mr. Gordon, I'd like to come work for you. I'd like to come work on your farm. I'd like to move to Ozark County. I'd like to get closer to you. Now, here's what that really boils down to in the final analysis. What you're saying, in effect, think about it now. I'm dissatisfied with my guardian. I'm dissatisfied with the state of Florida or the state of California or the United States of America. I'm dissatisfied with my guardian, and I'm looking for a new guardian, and you look like a good guy, Mr. Gordon. Now, there was a time when I used to support a lot of people in 30. I had 30 employees, and I supported 30 families. But I looked at this the other day, my wife and I were talking about it, and said, if you've got one call a week, now that's up from about one a month to one a week. Now, that's four times more. That's 52 people a year. 52 of you listeners out there are calling me and saying, I'd like to go to work for you. And that's great, and I'm impressed, and I'm flattered, and I appreciate your vote of confidence. But unfortunately, little Georgie Gordon cannot support 52 other families. I don't have enough money. I'm an old man. I don't have enough physical energy to get out there and to plant enough food in my garden to feed 52 families, assuming these 52 families were made up of four persons each, which would be around 100 people. You know, could George Gordon support 100 people? And the answer is no, I don't think I can. I don't think I've got enough physical energy to do that. I can support the four in my family. I might even be able to support four or five other families, but not 50. But, you know, you 50 families out there could all support yourselves if you knew how. Now, there was a time in America when we practiced individual responsibility rather than collective irresponsibility. Collective irresponsibility, that's where we practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. That just produces lines of people standing in line to share the shortage. Now, there's no shortage out there right now. As I speak to you here in July of 2005, boys and girls, there's no shortages out there. There's no rationing. There's plenty of everything for everybody. And I can remember rationing. I can remember World War II. There actually was rationing. And because of that, we had to have ration cards and buttons and coupons and stand in line and queues, and we had to share the shortage and do without. Well, let me describe that for you, and then I'm going to show you. Here's what I think would be a wise course of action to prevent your house being foreclosed on, your car being repossessed, and you being reduced to unemployment, welfare, food stamps, maybe a concentration camp, or at least a relocation center. That's what the Germans did for the Jews, you know, sent them off to relocation centers. That maybe there's a better formula out there. And I don't know that it necessarily entails gold and silver. So let me describe this rationing thing. Here's World War II. You can't get coffee. Why? Well, because coffee comes from overseas, and you got to ship it in. And every ship that the United States government could steal, beg, borrow, or utilize in any way is hauling troops and war material and war cargo off to the battlefields of Europe and Japan. So there's not very many ships hauling coffee from Colombia up to Baton Rouge or up to New Orleans, Louisiana. I mean, that's just not happening. So there is some coming in, but what little bit that is coming in has to be sent off to the war effort, and things are kind of unnatural and unnormal. And so we have to have rationing of coffee, sugar, tires, gasoline, all kinds of stuff. Now, you know, you can live a long time without gasoline, you can live a long time without tires, but you can't live a long time without food, shelter, and clothing. So let's get down to the basics. Subsistence and survival deals with food, clothing, and shelter. If we happen to have an automobile with tires on it, that's frosting on the cake. That's gravy. That's fun time. That's great. We want that. But you can live a long time without it. And if you have to choose between wheels and beans, I think that you'll make a wiser choice choosing pinto beans over wheels. Because in World War II, we didn't have a car. In fact, nobody that I know of in Corbell, California had a car. There were a few cars. Yeah, there were a few cars, a few trucks running around. But there weren't very many, and the people that had them had a reason for having them, because you had to have a ration card to get gasoline. Now, you can complain about gasoline at $2 or $3 a gallon, but boys and girls, there's plenty of it available. Plenty of it available. You wait until it's $3 or $4 or $5 a gallon and you can only get 5 gallons a week, then put that in your pipe and smoke and see how that's going to come down. And you're going to be paying those same $800 a month payments on that SUV and you're limited to 5 gallons a week. And the price of that stuff may be $5 or $10 a gallon. And you may have the money to buy it, but without the ration card, you're not going to have the gasoline anyway. So if you're living in the city and you're commuting to work and you're burning up 30, 40 gallons of gas a week, you know, you might want to rethink your lifestyle and your living style, the place that you're living, and you might want to make some radical changes. I know that, for instance, during World War II, we couldn't get sugar, so I think we were allowed a pound of sugar a month or a pound of sugar a week. I don't remember exactly, but it wasn't very much. I got 1 teaspoon on my cereal in the morning, you know, when we were eating cereal, 1 teaspoon of sugar, that's it. That's your ration. Well, you know, what if I wanted 2, 5, or 10, you know, scoops of sugar on my cereal? You know, today there's plenty of sugar available. Now, in 1939, 40, and 41, my grandmother could have, had she known that there was a war coming, had she known that rationing was coming, she could have stockpiled 100, 200, 500, 1,000 pounds of sugar. There was no shortage of it, not in 39, 40, and 41. It was probably a nickel a pound. I mean, today it's only 4 bits a pound, isn't it, or 60 or 70 cents. I mean, it's not very expensive. Sugar's pretty cheap. Now, had she stockpiled that sugar, then we would have had plenty of sugar for World War II. Other people would have been standing in line, but our standard of living would have been a lot higher, a lot better, had instead of we been sharing 1 teaspoon of sugar. Coffee was another thing. People were making coffee, and then they'd take the grounds, and then they would make coffee out of those grounds a second, third, and fourth time. Did you know that? In France, the used coffee grounds sold for $5 a pound. Used coffee grounds, $5 a pound. And that was in 1943, 44, 45. That was in France during the war, 44 and 45. Think of that, $5 a pound for used coffee grounds. That's because it was in such short supply in ration. Now it's coming again. Now the reason that the conservative newsletter writers are telling you to buy gold and silver and get out of debt is good advice, but the presumption that all of these people have is that when this economic collapse occurs, depression envelops us, hyperinflation takes over, stagflation is rampant, that Walmart will be full of food, clothing, and children, and that all you'll do is change your gold into commercial paper and take the paper down to Walmart and trade it in. But I want to tell you, boys and girls, that that's not the scenario that I'm seeing. That's not the scenario that I lived through in World War II and the Korean War. As a paper boy in 1950, during the Korean War, rubber bands were rationed. We couldn't get rubber bands and we had to fold our papers or deliver them flat. Well, let me tell you, a pound of rubber bands at that time was selling for $1.50 a pound. And I had my customers save the rubber bands and give them back to me when I collected on my paper route so that I would have rubber bands to wrap their papers in. So living without is possible. Might even be good for you, but it impacts upon your standard of living. For instance, let's take water. When this farm that I'm living on right now was established by old man Hale in 1914, he carried water from the spring up to the house that he built, which is about 400 feet, a little more than a football field long, in 2 5-gallon buckets. I can assure you that he wasn't flushing the toilet every time that he went and urinated a cup of urine into the toilet bowl. He wasn't flushing that down with 5 gallons of water that he had to carry 400 feet. So people used a lot less water. That's the point. So you can get by on a whole lot less, but your standard of living is a lot better when you have running water that comes in from a pressurized tank out of a well that has an endless supply, so that when you go potty, you can flush the toilet 10 times a day. It isn't anything for 50 gallons of water to go down the toilet. We don't care about how much water we use in our dishwasher, but I'll assure you that if I had to carry all that water up from the spring by hand, we would use a whole lot less of it. Now, that's the moral to the story. The concept that because you've got all this gold and silver that you're going to have all of these goods and services available to you, I think, is a fiction. So some of us, and this is spearheaded, I think, mainly by the Mormons. I don't know quite where they got their idea, but starting back in the 1870s, you know, this guy, Brigham Young, he said that all Mormons needed a 7-year supply of food on hand all the time. It's kind of a theological doctrine. Well, 7 years of food comes out of the Bible, and there was a fellow back in Genesis chapter 47 named Joseph. You can read the Joseph story. He starts off about Genesis chapter 42, 3, 4, 5, and he goes out and he has this dream, it was actually the Pharaoh had this dream, and Joseph came over and interpreted the dream for him. It was a message from God. Store up for 7 years, and then a 7-year famine. And so the concept that you see in the New Testament is that we learn from all of these examples that come from the Scripture. You know, Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Genesis 47 is one of those words that proceeded out of the mouth of God in a 7-year supply. Is pretty much the standard. And so Brigham Young, he came up with the conclusion. He said, well, it would be a good idea. Let's ask this question. Let's suppose that every Mormon family in the world today had a 7-year supply of food on hand. They got a 7-year supply of coffee, a 7-year supply of sugar, a 7-year supply of meat, a 7-year supply of spaghetti, you know, everything that they're going to use. What would be wrong with that? What would be so bad about that? Let's extrapolate that out a day further. Let's suppose that everybody in the United States of America had a 7-year supply of food on hand. Because when I was a kid in 1940, during World War II, every family had a storeroom. It was called a pantry. That pantry had a 1-year supply of food. 1 year. Not seven. Just one. And that's because families live from harvest to harvest. You see, you plant your corn in April. You harvest your corn in September. You plant your corn again next April. So from September until next April, excuse me, there's no corn in April, May, June, and July. So, you know, while this corn is growing, you don't have any corn. And you only harvest your corn. You only harvest your crop once a year. You only get apples once a year. So the apples that you're getting in October have to last you until the end of next September. So we used to store apples. We used to dry food. We used to can food so that we had a 1-year supply. Now, after World War II, we got away from that because we have these supermarkets. And today, we believe in our just-in-time delivery. We Americans have a 3-day supply of food. Just check your own house. How much do you have? About a 3-day supply. Maybe you got a week. Okay, maybe you're a real nut and you got a month's supply of food. You could live a whole month, 30 days, with no food. Can't you just look back at the Bosnia War in the 1990s? Rwanda? Can you see the shortages that developed in those countries during periods of war? Now, it doesn't make any difference how much money you've got. I mean, if you've got enough money, there'll be a black market out there. And if you've got the money, in Bosnia, gasoline was selling for $20 a gallon in 1992 or 3 or 4 when that war was going on. And coffee was $4 a cup, $4 for a cup of coffee. And it was available on the black market. But, you know, most people don't have that kind of money. And furthermore, if the government catches you violating the rationing program that they set up, then they want to put you in jail or they want to penalize you. So number one, your gold and silver may be thrown to the bats and moles because you may not have the availability of the products. And number two, you may have a rationing system over there that's going to put you in jail. Wouldn't you be better off if you had your own supplies up front and ahead of time? And that's where old Brigham Young came in. Well, the Mormons, you know, being just natural, normal people like all the rest of us, they're just about as lazy as anybody you can point your finger at. So they began to water that down, and they said, well, 7 years is too much, 4 ought to be plenty. And so they, over the years, they lowered that to 4. And then they lowered that again to 2, and then they lowered it to 1. And then the last time I heard, they got a 3-day supply, and they're waiting for FEMA to feed them. 3-day supply like all the rest of us. So the Mormons have kind of gotten off of this, but before they got off of the food storage and the preparedness program, which I kind of suspect that the average rank and file Mormon is still stocking up a 1 or 2 year supply. They're just not advertising it because I think they're more concerned about you Catholics, Protestants, and Jews coming over and shooting them and then stealing their food. But, you know, that's really not a very viable solution, and I want to tell you why. Because I had a guy here one time, and he said, well, I know where to go when the end comes. I'll just come over and steal it from you, Gordon. And I thought, you know, this poor fool doesn't understand the logistics of the problem. So let me explain the logistics. Whether you think you should have a 1-year supply of food, a 2-year, 4-year, 7-year, I don't care what the numbers are, but let me tell you how much food that it takes to feed one person for one day. It's 1 pound dry or 3 pounds wet. So if you're going to open a can, it's 3 pounds of food a day. All right, so let's put in a stock of canned food. And, you know, you're going to have things, you know, like peas and beans and maybe some Spam and chipped beef and you know, whatever the cans, whatever you think you want to eat. Let's take 3 pounds a day because that's what you're going to eat. So take 3 times 365, and that's 1,095 pounds. That's 1,100 pounds of food. That's a half a ton. Half a ton. 1,100 pounds for one person for 1 year. What are you going to do? Come over here and shoot me and then load this half a ton up in your knapsack and carry it out of here? Have we taken leave of our senses? You're going to go over to the local Mormon and shoot this guy, and you're going to feed off of his pantry? Pray tell. Assuming that this Mormon's going to let you do that and that he's not going to shoot you in response to you trying to shoot him, have you thought this through? I mean, we're talking about quite a bit of weight here, 1,000 pounds, and that's for 1 year. Now, I think that you need a minimum of 4 years. So let's take that times 4 is 4,380. Now, that's 2 tons. 2 tons for a 4-year supply. That's one person. One person. 4 years. Wet food, canned. We're talking about 43.